Did you hear anything a while ago?
I have heard nothing out there but the rifle fire of our own men.
Not out there. Back that way.
The Boers jerked a thumb in the direction of the Del Mano Hacienda.
No, I heard nothing from that direction. What was it?
It was pistol fire. If I were to guess, I would say it was coming from Danny Dugan's guns. Whoever is down there is only acting on Dugan's behalf. Dugan is back behind us, preparing to do what he came here to do.
You believe this, and yet we sit here and do nothing?
We do exactly what our orders tell us to do.
I think I must take some men and go pursue.
Labourge grabbed his horse's bridle to keep Vesp from turning away toward the narrow path.
When the time comes for us to strike our target, we will do so quickly and without mercy. Until that time, we will do what all good soldiers do. We will wait. You were not present when I received our orders, Vesp. But you are my second in command, so you must pay attention and do as I tell you.
But, of course, forgive my exuberance.
On the floor of the flatlands, C.F. McCord stayed close to the ground, even though the rifle fire was coming nowhere near him. He knew that the well-spaced shots were now only meant to harass him into returning fire and revealing his position. But now that he had given Danielle all the time she needed to get through the pass, McCord wasn't interested in keeping this gunfight going. All he wanted to do now was get back across the flatland to where Tim and Jed were waiting without catching a stray bullet in the dark. McCord judged the rifle fire coming from the wide half-circle surrounding him and decided there were no more than three or four men left out there now. Where had the others gone? While he had spent the past hour and a half firing, then hurrying to a new position to make them think there was still more than one down here, it suddenly dawned on him that these gunmen must have been doing the same thing. Had they caught on to what he was doing and gone on ahead after Danielle? He hoped not. But whatever the case, it was time for him to move out. A silver-gray line was beginning to form on the eastern horizon. He wasn't about to get caught out on this flat, desolate land in broad daylight. Moving back to where he'd left his horse, hitched to a scrub juniper, McCord slipped atop the animal and heeled it forward, hoping the sound of its hooves could not be heard by the rifleman. So far, so good, McCord thought to himself, moving away across the flatland toward the far end of the basin where the twins would be waiting to cover his back. He'd told them to be ready to provide some long rifle fire for him if these men were close behind him. But as it now looked, McCord was going to be able to slip out of the flatlands unnoticed. 2 miles ahead, under the cover of dirty gray darkness, Tim and Jed Strange lay waiting in a low rise of rocks, seeing the distant flash of occasional rifle fire blink along the ridge lines.
Think Marshal McCord's managed to keep himself from getting shot?
I sure hope so. I have a lot of respect for that lawman. Not to mention the fact that Danielle thinks the world of him. I'd hate to see something happen to him.
Me too. He'd best be getting himself headed this way if he doesn't want to get caught out there in the morning light.
Out on the flatland, C.F. McCord rode with care, wanting to hurry and push the horse forward into a run, seeing the widening glow of sunlight rise up in the east. But he knew better than to press the horse too hard across this rocky land in the darkness. There were too many ways a horse could snap a leg in this rough terrain. Even as McCord thought about the many things that could happen, he felt the horse veer beneath him.
Easy, boy.
McCord sawed the reins, keeping the horse from bolting out of control. The horse settled and sidestepped away from the sound of the rattler. McCord knew what was coming.
Yeah!
He booted the horse forward just as a half dozen rifles honed in and fired from what seemed like every direction at once. Tim straightened up from his position on the ground and hurried a few yards forward, staring out into the darkness.
That had to be McCord's horse. He's in trouble out there. Get ready to take cover, Jed. I'm gonna call out to him, see what we can do to help him.
Do it.
Jed took a step back, getting ready to run back to their position on the ground.
McCord? What's wrong out there?
Rifle fire honed in on Tim's voice as he immediately ran back and joined his brother. Tim and Jed listened intently for any reply from McCord, but they heard none.
Do you think he's dead?
Could be. Or it could be that he's not gonna answer and bring more fire upon himself.
On the ground, 300 yards out on the flatland, McCord struggled to free his leg from beneath his dead horse, who had caught a bullet high in the chest. But the weight of the horse held him pinned. He had heard Tim Strange call out to him, but he dared not answer. Come daylight, if he wasn't able to free himself, all the gunman would have to do would be to walk down and shoot him to pieces.
Well, Fox,
McCord drew his pistol and laid it atop the dead horse's side for easy access when the time came.
You managed to get yourself into a real tight spot this time. Was she worth it?
All McCord could do was listen to the sound of horses moving down the rocks, heading his way.
You bet she was.
We gotta go get him, brother. I got a feeling he'd do the same for us if it was the other way around.
So do I. I just hope he ain't dead already.
Either way, at least we'll have done our best to help him.
I know. I'll go get the horses.
Tim listened to the silence of dawn as Jed moved back to the horses. After a moment, when Jed didn't return, Tim turned.
Jed? What's taking you so long?
When Jed didn't answer, Tim felt the skin on his neck grow prickly. He drew his pistol and ventured toward the horses, feeling for his steps carefully and quietly across the rocky ground. In a small clearing amid waist-high juniper and cactus, Tim froze at the sight of his brother Jed lying face down on the dirt. As soon as his senses realized what he was looking at, he instinctively fanned the pistol back and forth, searching the gray shadows as he moved forward and bent down to his brother.
Jed! Speak to me, are you all right?
Tim shook Jed by his arm. Just then a rifle butt slammed against the back of Tim's head. Tim spun half around as his legs buckled beneath him.
Get them both up on their horses. We'll collect the other one on the way in.
With Tim and Jed Strange lying slumped in their saddles, their pistols stripped from their holsters, the band of riflemen rode forward 300 yards. In the thin morning light, they saw the other men who had moved down from the ridgeline and now formed a wide circle around C.F. McCord, who lay with his legs still pinned beneath the dead horse. McCord raised his pistol and fanned it back and forth slowly from one man to the next.
Stay back, all of you! That's close enough!
Rifles raised in unison as the men moved in closer.
You heard him, men. That's close enough. Now stand fast. I think I would like to talk to this man. I am curious as to why a man would do something this foolish.
Henri Laborge stopped his horse and stepped down from the saddle.
I've got nothing to say to you. If you've got killing to do here, get it done.
McCord aimed his pistol at Henri Laborge.
Attendez. Wait. Surely we can take a moment to talk like reasonable men before we shoot holes in one another, eh?
Talk, then. I've got no plans made for this morning. Are those boys all right?
They have been better, I'm sure. But so much for them. Where is this Danny Dugan I have heard so much about?
I don't know who you're talking about.
McCord let his pistol slump a bit, but still kept it cocked and pointed.
Me and my friends there came all this way on our own.
Oh, I see. And for no reason at all, you decide to shoot at me and my men. Why? Just to see if we would shoot back at you. As you see, we most certainly will.
All right, I'll level with you. I'm a U.S. federal marshal who's been on the Del Monos trail for a long time. I've heard about this gunman Danny Dugan headed this way to clean up the Del Monos, and I couldn't stand the thought of him getting here first. So I took off my badge and crossed the border.
I see. Let's you and me call a truce for a moment, eh?
McCord didn't answer, but he did lower his pistol barrel further. Laborge ventured closer with his hands still chest high, moving slowly, one step, then another, until finally he stood 3 feet from McCord and looked down at him, shaking his head.
It is a most tragic thing to lose a good horse.
Yeah, he was one of the best I ever owned.
And yet you risk your life. The life of a good horse, and the life of your two friends, to come all this way in order to kill Saul Del Mano. That seems too foolish.
Well, that happens to be the whole of it. Take it or leave it.
The Del Manos must be considered very dangerous men in America, eh?
No, not for my money anyway. I've never thought of them as anything but two-bit thugs and killers. Why do you ask? Don't tell me you have scruples when it comes to who you do your paid killing for.
No, of course not.
Laborge stooped down beside McCord.
I work only for Generalissimo Ortega. He gives me his orders, and I follow him. It makes life simple for me. But still, I can't help but sometimes ask myself why I am ordered to kill a particular person.
Don't ask me to justify what you do, mister. I came here hunting for Saul Del Mano. It didn't work out the way I wanted it to. So that's too bad for me. I take what's coming to me with no complaints. Will you be able to do the same when your time comes?
Laborge stared into his eyes as he seemed to work something out in his mind. Then he stood up.
That's an interesting question, lawman. I don't think I can say what I will do when my time comes.
Henri Laborge turned his back on McCord and faced the men who sat atop their horses beside Tim and Jed.
Take them down from their horses and bring them over here.
McCord raised his pistol back toward Laborge.
If you think I'll lay here and watch my friends die without trying to help them, you're badly mistaken.
Laborge seemed not to hear McCord. He gazed off toward four of his men who came riding in from the south, surrounding Luis Delmano's open-topped buggy.
Well, well. Here comes the leader of the Delmano family right now.
You hear me, mister? Don't expect me to keep our truce if you try killing my friends.
What?
Laborge looked down at McCord as if he'd forgotten he was lying there.
Tell me, lawman, how many shots do you have in that pistol?
It's fully loaded. 6 shots.
He looked over to where 3 men had pulled Tim and Jed Strange down from their horses and were now dragging them toward him, the twins still half conscious and barely able to stand.
What are you getting ready to do?
I'm getting ready to carry out my task, of course.
Laborge gestured a hand toward the horse lying on McCord's leg.
If we removed this animal, would you be able to stand on your own?
I'd sure give it a try. I don't think my leg is broken.
Laborge motioned for 2 men to step in and help McCord as Luis Delmano's buggy drew closer. The men struggled with the dead horse while Laborge turned away to acknowledge Luis Delmano.
Is that the gunman? Is that Danny Dugan?
Luis Delmano brought the buggy to a halt and jumped down from it. Laborge looked Luis Delmano up and down before answering, not liking the way Delmano had barged in without so much as a nod or a greeting.
Well, is it him?
Laborge shook his head, watching McCord stand up with the help of the 2 men beside him.
No, this is not Danny Dugan.
What about either one of those 2?
No, Danny Dugan is not here. These men only ride with him. We surrounded them overnight.
Oh, really? Then what is that one doing wearing a gun? Why haven't all 3 of them been shot?
Because shooting these men is not the reason me and my soldiers came here.
Soldiers? Ha! You and your men are supposed to do as you're told. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, whatever killing you're paid to do, I demand that you get to doing it.
I'm glad you feel this way.
Laborge raised his pistol.
It makes my task so much easier.
Delmano hit the ground with a stunned look on his dead face.
There. It is done. Just as the Generalissimo ordered. Now we can all go back to Mexico City.
Laborge stood with the barrel of his smoking pistol tipped slightly toward C.F. McCord. Tim and Jed Strange stood addled and speechless, as did the rest of Laborge's men.
You mean you never were out to kill Danny Dugan? It was Luis Delmano you wanted to kill all along?
Wanted to kill.
Laborge lowered his pistol from McCord's direction.
I have never wanted to kill anyone. But this one had become too demanding over the years. He thought he could go tell the government what he wanted done, and they would have to do it for him. You know how overbearing you Americans can get, left unchecked.
What about the sheriff, DeWeese? They saw you kill him. What was his part in all this?
He might have been a lawman on your side of the border. But over here, he was nothing more than a paid informant for Luis Delmano. When Raul Hernandez told Generalissimo of how things were going out here, it was easily decided to do away with these fools and start anew.
Laborge looked at Luis Delmano's body and shook his head.
This one never had the power or the connections he thought he had. He always thought Raul Hernandez was sent here to do his bidding. In truth, Hernandez was only keeping an eye on things out here. Luis Delmano was nothing more than a well-paid hired hand. Too bad he never realized it. He could have lived longer.
Laborge lowered the pistol into his holster.
What about us now?
For all the trouble you have caused, I should kill all 3 of you. But I was told not to do so.
Then we can just leave? Nobody will try to stop us?
Makes you feel foolish, doesn't it? Knowing that all this could have been avoided.
I didn't know it at the time. All I knew was I didn't want you shooting my friend Danny.
I understand. If I let all 3 of you go, does it mean I will have no more trouble from all these troublesome Delmanos?
Just let me round myself up a horse and you have my word on it.
In a weathered plank shack on a narrow clearing between 2 craggy rock peaks, Saul Delmano reached across the small table and took a bottle of rye whiskey from an outstretched hand. In the circling glow of lantern light, he threw back a drink from the bottle and set it down on the tabletop as he wiped the back of his hand across his mouth. He stood glaring down at the outlaws seated at the table. They sat staring, waiting to hear what Saul had to say next. On a blanket on the floor beneath the front window, Ramon Delmano waited as well. He had been watching his brother drink and talk for the past hour. Ramon marveled at how the whiskey had not seemed to dull Saul's thinking or slur his speech. There appeared to be no drunkenness to Saul Delmano, only a white-hot rage that grew and swelled in intensity from somewhere inside him. With each turn of the bottle to his lips, Saul Delmano became more and more a monster, less and less a man. The others saw it too, for how could they miss it? But then, how could he have missed seeing it himself all these years? His half-brother Saul was a raving madman, a desperate beast who must soon be put down for good, perhaps for his own sake as well as those around him.
There's not a stage or bank in the country that can't be robbed. Any fool can do it, provided he ain't squeamish about getting somebody's brain splattered all over his shirt. I even managed to teach my kid brother a little about the business. For years, our pa was afraid Ramon here was never going to amount to nothing. Now look at him. Out here, hiding out. Just like the rest of us.
Bet it makes you real proud, eh, Ramon? Yeah, bank robbing is fine, so stage robbing, but let's get back to that reward you was talking about. You know, for killing this Danny Dugan. That seems like a powerful lot of money to me for just shooting one gunslinging saddle tramp.
Forget the reward. I told you, that's all over and done with. Those men Pa hired will kill him at Bloody Horse Pass if they ain't already. Now I'm ready to go on to bigger and better things. Think you four boys can keep up with me and little brother here? Wouldn't want none of you choking on our dust.
What do you think, Wiley? Can you and Tubbs keep up with Saul and his brother?
Wiley Thornton sneered, giving a glance to Dick Tubbs, who sat beside him.
Shoot. I expect me and Dick can hold our own.
Thornton turned his glance to the other outlaw.
What do you think, Hayne? Do you see anything here that gives you pause to doubt your abilities?
Not yet, I ain't.
Carnes looked at Dick Tubbs and Wiley Thornton, then back at Saul Delmano.
You haven't seen anything I wouldn't do, provided the money's right.
Good. Come daylight, I say we saddle up, ride across the border, and commence a killing spree that'll keep the locals trembling in their boots for a long time to come.
Ramon watched for a moment in disbelief. There was no way he'd go any further with his brother. He'd hoped Saul would have passed out by now, giving him an opportunity to gather his horse and slip away in the darkness. But now that he saw that wasn't going to happen, Ramon was ready to get out of here the best way he could. He stood up and walked over to the door, his rifle draped over his forearm.
Where the hell are you going? We're getting ready to make some plans here.
Ramon gave him a flat stare, reaching for the door.
I'm going to the Jake. You don't need me to make plans. It looks like you have everything worked out in your mind.
Damn right I do.
Saul Delmano grinned, tapping a finger to the side of his head as he turned back to the others. Ramon moved quickly across the narrow clearing to the small corral where they had left their horses for the night. In a moment, he had bridled and saddled his horse and swung atop it. He rode the animal through the corral, and without leaving his saddle, he closed the gate behind him. Then he heeled his horse out toward the path leading east down the craggy hillside. A thin sliver of sunlight mantled the far horizon. Inside the shack, Wiley Thornton and the other three men rose halfway from their chairs at the sound of hooves along the hard, rocky path.
Don't worry, boys. That's only little brother Ramon cutting out on me. I've been expecting it.
You mean you ain't gonna stop him?
Nah, there's no point in it. I tried to wise him up to this kind of life, see if he might have a knack for it. But it did no good at all. He just ain't got the makings.
Do you trust him enough to think he won't bring somebody back here on us?
If I didn't, Wiley, he'd be laying dead in the dirt right now, brother or no brother. Besides, who can he bring down on us? I told you, Danny Dugan is buzzard bait the minute he tries coming through Bloody Horse Pass.
Saul walked to the door, threw it open, and gazed out through the darkness in the direction of the path his brother had taken.
Ramon won't do anything to hurt me. The fact is, he's in love with a servant gal back at the spread. I expect he'll take her and make a run for it.
probably play it straight for the rest of his life.
Hell, I wish him luck.
Oh, that don't sound like the Saul Delmano I know. I never saw you give anybody a break. I wish anybody luck in your life.
Well, you're seeing it now, Rupert. Ramon leaving doesn't change a thing, though. We're clearing out of here at sunup, boys, as soon as there's enough light on the trail.
Oh, I get it now. You almost had me fooled, Saul, but now I see what you're doing.
What are you talking about, Rupert?
I'm talking about why Saul really doesn't mind that Ramon took off and left us. He knows that if there's anybody on that trail, we'll hear about it sure enough. But Ramon will be the one to run headlong into him, right, Saul?
Now you're starting to get the picture, Rupert. All my wild talking and drinking was just to rattle old Ramon into leaving.
Bull. I don't believe that. Nobody would set their own brother up that way. You might have wanted him to leave, but just so he'd get himself killed and we'd be warned by it? I don't believe I could ride with a man who'd do a thing like that. Tell me it ain't true, Saul.
Delmano turned and looked at the four men in turn.
All right then, Wiley. It ain't true. Does that make you happy?
Wiley Thornton nodded and looked down at the dirt floor.
Why I done what I done ain't important. Now let's get ready to move out. It'll soon be daylight.
The sound of distant gunfire resounded behind Danielle and Greta when they had left the hacienda and followed the hoofprints toward the hills. But before they had traveled 1,000 yards, the guns had fallen silent, leaving Danielle to wonder if McCord and her brothers were all right. When Danielle stopped for a moment and looked back across the dark sky, Greta saw the look of concern and dread on her face.
If we hurry on, we'll be at the hideout before first light.
Good. The sooner I get this over with, the better. You said there might be others out there. How many do you suppose?
I can't say for sure, but Ramon told me there are always outlaws passing through looking for a place to lay low. Luis Delmano still provides a hideout for them. Most of them are men he rode with in the past.
They continued steadily and quietly for the next 20 minutes as the sky in the east grew wider in silver light. At an upward turn in the trail, Danielle was the first to hear the sound of a horse's hooves descending toward them. She reached out and grabbed Greta's horse by its bridle, stopping it.
Listen, there's a rider coming.
Perhaps it is Ramon. He said he would return as soon as he could get away.
Keep quiet.
Danielle pulled both horses to one side of the narrow trail and into the dark cover of a rock crevice.
If it is Ramon, we'll know soon enough.
You told me you would try not to shoot him.
I know what I said I'd do, but if this is Ramon coming, it's all up to him now.
Danielle slid down from her saddle and helped Greta step down. She ushered Greta back into the dark crevice and handed her both sets of reins.
Keep the horses quiet. If you give up our position, it'll only make matters worse. Don't speak until we know for sure it's Ramon.
I understand. I'll be quiet. But if it is my Ramon, please do not kill him, Mr. Dugan. If not for his sake, then mine and the baby.
Danielle stepped out into the center of the narrow trail as the rider came closer.
Ramon Delmano! If that's you, raise your hands and come forward slowly. This is Danny Dugan. I have Greta with me.
Danielle could only see the faintest outline of Ramon.
Yes, it's me, Ramon. Where's Greta? What have you done to her?
I'm right here, Ramon. I'm all right. Don't do anything foolish. Mr. Dugan has promised to let us go. He only wants Saul.
That's right, Ramon. Point me towards Saul, and you and the young lady can go your own way. I have no fight with you.
I don't believe you, Dugan.
Danielle's hand acted on pure instincts. As the lead left the chamber, she realized that Ramon's shots flew upward.
Ramon! No! Ramon! He only wants Saul, not you!
Danielle watched Greta run past her in the darkness. Knowing that at least one bullet had hit Ramon, and knowing that whatever the young woman found in the trail would not be a pretty sight, Danielle hurried forward with caution. A few feet back from the body lying on the ground, Danielle caught up to Greta and grabbed her by the arm, holding her back.
Stay back, ma'am. You don't want to see...
No!
Greta slung her arm free and raced forward, sliding down beside Ramon, cradling his head in her lap and clutching his face to her bosom.
Why, Ramon? Why?
Danielle kneeled down beside Greta, noting the long, bloody crease above Ramon Delmano's left ear. As Greta rocked back and forth on the ground, Danielle looked Ramon over and saw no other wound.
I think he's alive.
Danielle opened Greta's arms from around Ramon's head.
Give him room to breathe.
Ramon turned his face back and forth in Greta's lap. Danielle reached down in the dirt, picked up Ramon's rifle, and cradled it across her forearm. Taking Ramon's pistol from his holster, Danielle stood up.
Keep his head up. Keep talking to him. I'll go get him some water.
At the sound of the gunshots, Saul Delmano and the four other outlaws had veered slightly on the trail and came to a halt.
Boys, there ain't a doubt in my mind that was Ramon's rifle.
Well, as quiet as it's gotten, I'd say somebody has bit the dust.
Rupert Terry stepped his horse closer to Saul Delmano and slipped his rifle from its boot.
Looks like Ramon did warn us, whether you intended for him to or not.
Yeah, he warned us all right. Now let's ease on down there and see what's waiting for us.
Damn, Saul, we've been warned! Shouldn't we swing around a different direction and get on out of here?
Ordinarily, that's exactly what I would do, Roop. But not this morning. I figure, out of respect for Ramon, I'll just mosey on down there and check it out. I always was the nosy sort.
But you already know what has to be this Danny Dugan fella. Let's pull away from here.
And what? Have him on our trail every turn in the road?
Saul pulled his pistol from his holster.
No thanks, boys. That ain't my style of travel. I figured somebody would have killed Dugan by now. Well, since they ain't, I best do it myself.
Saul raised the pistol into the air. Then he lowered the pistol, replaced the spent cartridges, spun it, and put it back loosely into his holster.
This ain't like you, Saul.
I know it. If any of you wants to pull off to the side, I'll not hold it against you. But I'm gonna ride down and face this Dugan fellow straight up. Once and for all.
Saul nudged his horse forward on the trail.
I've just got to see if he's as fast and tough as they all say he is.
Rupert Terry looked at the others as Saul Delmano rode slowly into the grayness.
Well, hell, boys. I'd kind of like to see that myself.
Rupert turned his horse forward, the others following suit and forming a single line down the narrow trail. Upon hearing the three shots fired by Saul Delmano, Danielle checked her pistols and waited. Moments passed slowly until she heard what she was looking for. Danielle turned to Greta and Ramon.
Here they come, Greta. As soon as he's able, you get him up in a saddle and clear out of here. If my friends run into him on the trail between here and Bloody Horse Pass, there's no telling what will happen.
Dugan, I don't know what to say.
No need in saying anything, Ramon. I told this woman I was only after Saul, and I meant it. From here on, the two of you get a new start in life. As far as I'm concerned, I wish you both all the luck in the world. Now do like I asked you to. I've got business to settle.
Dugan, I want you to know that I wasn't shooting at you a while ago. It was for Saul. I had to let him know.
I know how it goes. I've a couple of brothers of my own.
What he does now is all up to him. I gave him all I owe him, didn't I?
Yep. You can't ask for more than that. Now get on out of here.
Danielle stepped out into the trail and started walking slowly forward, a silver morning mist wafting at her shoulders. Danielle stopped and waited at a point where the trail turned up at a steeper angle.
Danny Dugan! I'm Saul Delmano. Where's my brother Ramon? Did you kill him?
No, I didn't kill him. Ramon left here a few minutes ago with a young woman named Greta. They're well on their way now. It's just you and me.
On their way, huh? Well, God love them. Ain't that just fine and dandy? I expect the two of them will be just as happy as two coons in a corn crib. Probably live the rest of their lives watching the sunrise and set together.
There's worse things. Are you ready to come down and finish this?
Yep. As ready as you are, I reckon. Is there anything we need to talk about first?
Not that I can think of. You killed my pa. You and the others that were riding with you that day in the territory. I've killed them all but you. There's no more to say about it.
Saul stepped forward slowly, seeing the outline of Danielle's head and shoulder take form out of the morning mist.
Hell, you don't even sound mad about it, Dugan.
I'm past mad, Delmano. I'm past a lot of things since I started out looking for all you killers. All I want now is to be done with it.
Saul Del Mano stopped 40 feet away and planted his feet shoulder-width apart. Danielle saw him through the gray morning light.
Oh, now who are you trying to kid, Danny Dugan? You don't want to be done with killing. Killing ain't an easy thing to get rid of.
I'll manage.
Danielle reached out slowly with both hands and drew both sides of her duster back behind her holsters.
You'll manage? After killing Ruth Gaddis, Byler, Grego, Chancey, Burke, and all the others, no telling how many more along the way, you think you can just put it down and let it lay?
Oh, you poor fool. Well, I reckon killing you is the best thing I can do for you then.
Saul raised his left hand slowly and scratched his cheek, taking his time, considering things, it seemed. But Danielle had seen this kind of diversion before, and she was ready for his move when he made it.
You know something, Dugan? When I first heard he was looking for me, I told a couple of pals of mine that I was going to...
His hand went for the pistol at his hip. But two rounds exploded from Danielle's Colts before Saul Del Mano raised his pistol high enough to fire a shot. Saul Del Mano struggled, rising onto his elbow, his left hand clutched to his bleeding chest, the fingers of his right hand less than an inch from his pistol, where he dropped it in the dirt.
I reckon that does it for me. All this damn killing, just for your paw? Ain't nobody's paw worth all this.
Danielle leveled her Colt at Saul Del Mano's forehead.
Mine was...
Danielle turned to the silver morning mist lying upward along the trail.
Anybody there wants to be a part of it, come on down and face me like men. Otherwise, lower your sights and ride out of here. I am finished. Do you hear me? I'm through with it.
All right, Dugan. We're leaving here. We're not gonna fight with you unless you bring it on.
Fair enough.
Danielle replaced her spent cartridges and closed her pistol. She stood in silence and watched the dim figures move back into the silver mist. Farther down along the trail, riding ahead of Ramon and leading his horse behind her, Greta said a silent prayer and looked back at Ramon as he raised the bandana from the side of his head and cast a glance back over his shoulder.
Don't look back, Ramon. We must never look back. Neither of us. No matter which one dies, we cannot let ourselves think about it.
Ramon nodded as he nudged his horse forward and rode closer to Greta's side. They rode on for another mile until the first long rays of sunlight found their way through the stands of rock and spread golden in the sky before them. Once they reached the base of the hills, they turned onto the flatland and rode on, leaving a low rise of dust behind them. In the distance, C.F. McCord watched the two riders through his field lens.
Who do you suppose it is?
I have no idea. But whoever they are, they're coming off the hill trail, just below where we heard the shooting.
Reckon Jed and I ought to catch up to them? See what's been going on up there?
No, I don't think so. I think we best keep on your sister's tracks. Something's happened up there. We need to see what the outcome was, one way or the other. I'd hoped we might catch up to her in time to be of some help once Henri turned us loose. Looks like we missed our chance.
Look, Marshal, we're just as concerned about her as you are. You know that. But if there's one thing Jed and I learned about our sister, it's that she's a good hand at taking care of herself.
I know that, boys. There's not a doubt in my mind that she's taken care of Saul Del Mano by now, if he was up there. I just want to at least be there when she comes down off the trail.
Tim and Jed Strange gave one another a knowing glance as McCord gigged his horse ahead of them on the trail.
Looks like we're apt to wind up with the lawman in the family, Jed.
Wouldn't surprise me a bit.
Tim and Jed let their horses fall in behind McCord, letting him lead them. They rode on for another mile and a half, and as they neared the base of the long line of hills, the sight of Danielle rounding a turn down onto the stretch of flatland caused them to stop cold in their tracks.
Thank God, it's her. She's all right.
McCord heeled his horse forward and raced across the land, raising a high stir of dust. Jed started to heel his horse forward into a run as well, but Tim reached out and clasped his horse's bridle.
Not so fast, Brother Jed. Give the two of them a few minutes alone.
Yeah, I reckon that's a good idea.
Jed Strange settled his horse and sat watching McCord close the distance between himself and Danielle. When McCord was about 10 feet away from Danielle, he reined in his horse. Then the horse sidestepped in a half circle as McCord looked Danielle up and down.
He's dead.
I figured as much. But what about you? Are you...
No, I'm not wounded. I came out all right. That was his brother Ramon riding off over there. In the end, it was only Saul and me, face to face, the way I'd hoped for it.
Danielle swung her leg over her saddle and stepped down, taking off her hat and letting the cool morning wind blow through her hair.
How'd it go for you and the twins?
It was peculiar. I'll tell you all about it sometime, but not now.
McCord also stepped down from his saddle and swept his dusty Stetson from atop his head.
What I'd really like to know right now is your real name, Danny Dugan.
It's Danielle McCord. I reckon you can call me that from now on.
Danielle reached down, unfastened her gun belt, and swung it up over her shoulder. McCord moved in closer, his reins in his gloved hands.
Well, Danielle, you look no worse for the wear.
He stood only a foot from her, waiting for any sign or any hint of what she might want him to do next. Danielle tried to return his smile, but it didn't work for her. Her expression turned tired, solemn all of a sudden.
But I am worse for the wear, CF. I'm worse for the wear more than I ever thought I would be.
It's over, Danielle.
I know, but I can't feel it yet. It's still in me.
Danielle's eyes moved along the far horizon as if in search of something.
Then let me help you. Tell me what you want, Danielle. I'll do whatever it takes to put this all to rest. I'll go, if that's what it takes. Or I'll stay. Just tell me what you...
How about you just hold me, CF?
Danielle's eyes glistened wet as she turned them to McCord and stepped forward into his arms.
Well, I can do that easy enough, I reckon. The hard part might be turning you loose.
Then don't turn me loose, CF.
Danielle pressed her face to his chest, feeling the warmth of his arms around her, and she stood for a moment, liking the slow, steady beat of his heart through the dusty breast of his riding duster.
It's over, Pa.
Danielle closed her eyes and let the gun belt slip from her shoulder and fall to the ground at her feet.
It's over.
Danny Dugan, Book 3, Riders of Judgment, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2001, Ralph Compton. Published by arrangement with the estate of Ralph Compton, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2015, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Danny Stoller, Evan Casey, Matthew Schley, Bradley Smith, James Lewis, Nick DePinto, James Konacek, Scott Graham, Christopher Sheeran, Scott McCormick, Laura C. Harris, Eric Messner, David Jordan, Thomas Keegan, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Mort Shelby, Michael Glenn, Jeff Allen, Ken Jackson, Richard Rowan, Tim Carlin, Todd Schofield, Gregory Woodell, Chris Gennebach, Andy Brownstein, Michael John Casey, Tim Getman, Nora Ashrati, Matthew Bassett, Joel David Santner, Stephen Carpenter, Patrick Busink, David Harris, Gary Tells, Jefferson A. Russell, and Jonathan Church. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Original music by Johann Detweiler, Dan Sondak, and John Glennon. If you enjoyed Danny Dugan Book 3, Riders of Judgment, be sure to check out the Golgotha series by R.S. Belcher, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Golgotha by R.S. Belcher, a new Gothic Western.
Welcome to the town of Golgotha, Nevada, just beyond the 40-mile desert. It's 1869, just after the war between the states, and people are moving west to find new lives and new opportunities. We're a cattle town that hides more than its fair share of unnatural secrets. Meet our sheriff, John Highfather, a rebel who bears the mark of the noose around his neck. Some say he's a dead man whose time has not yet come.
People die, Earl. Up on the mountain, down in the valley, everyone dies.
Everyone but you, John.
Everyone but me. You've heard the stories, haven't you, Earl? Stories about me?
They say you sold your soul to the devil, John. That's what they say.
His deputy, Mutt, who's kin to the coyotes.
We're keeping the horses over there so they can stay upwind of me. Horses don't like me.
I thought horses liked Indians.
Well, they don't care much for me.
Our mayor, Harry Pratt, who guards a hoard of mythical treasures and powerful religious artifacts.
The plates revealed that the final days are upon us, that the keys to the bottomless pit are free and in the hands of the Prophet of Darkness. This whole town is about to be wiped from the face of the earth. We need to get everyone together and prepare to get out of here.
Maud Stapleton, a banker's wife who belongs to a secret order of assassins.
Now, you have become a fairly decent knife thrower, and I am pleased with how you are coming along with your short blade fighting, but we still need to work on your knife catching, dear.
And me? Well, I'm Malachi Bick, shady saloon owner, gambler, raconteur, and I have a finger in every secret and shady deal that goes down in Golgotha. I may know more about this town's true origins than anyone. And let's just say my roots go back to the beginning. And I don't just mean Golgotha's.
Go on! Hide! You failed! Your family failed! It's mine! Golgotha is mine! Lick your wounds while you can. Tomorrow is the last sunrise this miserable world of lies will ever see.
So, come on by and stay a spell. If you hurry, you just might beat the devil.
Book 1, Six Gun Tarot, is available now in glorious graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can select from over 900 titles and 60 series in either CD or high-quality download formats. If you would like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase the whole sets on CD or USB flash drive from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can now earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable toward future online purchases. You can also get full mobile downloads directly to your phone or tablet with our new Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices, so you can listen on the go, anytime, anywhere. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.